Well, I mentioned last week that I was in Pigeon Forge the weekend before for Memorial Day, part of Memorial Day weekend, and then that week. And I told the story that we stayed in a cabin in which the pump in the well went out. Now, we didn't know that's what it was, but the first day we were there, it went out. And so we were trying to make calls, but it's Memorial Day weekend. Nobody's working. So down the hill from us, somebody showed up to refill a different well. And I walked down there with the other guy we were staying with, and we asked him, hey, is this a problem everywhere? Are wells empty? And they said, yeah, it is. But it wasn't the problem at where we were staying, which was my friend's aunt's place. It did turn out to be the well pump, and we didn't get it fixed until the Tuesday night before we left on Wednesday. So basically the whole time we were there, we didn't have any running water. That was fun with me and my wife and our three kids and him and his wife and their three kids all in one place and no water. That was the story. Told it last week. What I failed to mention is it was still a really, really nice cabin. I mean, we're talking about one room that has three or four beds in it that she, the woman who owns it, his aunt, built just for their grandkids. And then another room with a bed, two more bedrooms upstairs, and one master bedroom downstairs on the main floor. I mean, the place is super nice. It was it's a deluxe cabin in Pigeon Forge. It's really nice. And I got curious. I looked up what this thing cost over the years. And in 2010, somebody had bought that cabin for $120,000. Now, it had only been built in 2002. So this is 8 years after it was built. It sold for $120,000. That's as far back as the records I could find. Then my guess is that person fixed it up a little bit and then resold it about a year and a half later for $280,000. So it probably was in some disrepair from whoever had bought it. But still, $280,000 is what it sold for in 2013. Now, in 2013, I wouldn't have been able to afford a $280,000 house. I think most people probably wouldn't. But now you hear $280,000, you go, oh, that's pretty normal for a nice size house, especially one in Pigeon Forge. So I looked up what that house costs today. Again, $120,000 in about 2010 or 11, $280,000 in 2013. You know what it costs now to have a nice big cabin in Pigeon Forge or near Pigeon Forge? It says it's about $750,000, $750,000. And I began asking myself, why has the real estate gone insane? These are questions we've asked before here on Wiggins America. If you listen to conservative talk radio, or really if you think about the economy at all, you've probably asked these questions of yourself. Why do houses cost so much more now? Well, it does depend on where you live. I pulled up this article that says house prices are tied to whether your state is red or blue. It's using data from Realtor.com. It says states that vote Republican tend to be more rural, and the lower population density could contribute to lower mortgage costs. They're also more concentrated in the South, where incomes have historically been lower, according to Kenneth Chilton, associate professor of public administration at Tennessee. During the first quarter of this year, single-family home prices in 93% of metro areas in the U.S. increased, according to the National Association of Realtors. So we keep waiting for the bottom to drop out of the real estate market, and it just keeps not happening. Isn't that crazy? Because this is why it's so important is not just, oh, the first time you go to buy a house, and Gen Z is really getting it in the pooch on this. It's more that most Americans' wealth is tied up in their house. The place where most people have the most money, if they were to sell some sort of asset, is that one, is their house. And so if you got into the market before it went crazy in 2021, you're probably okay because you can sell something for higher than you bought it and then buy something for higher than it ever was too. But at least you're kind of like in the market then. It's if you're getting into it for the first time that you are really getting it hard. What are the candidates saying? This article says Democrat President Joe Biden has proposed tax credits for some buyers and sellers to boost construction. We know affordable housing has been a challenge for a long time. To solve it long term, we have to increase supply, Biden said in March in a speech in Las Vegas. However, his GOP rival, former President Donald Trump, has accused Biden of attacking the suburban lifestyle and said his policies could reduce home values. Here's the thing. Both of those things, actually, I think are true, because what Biden is proposing, tax credits to increase construction, is not a bad idea. I don't love the government getting involved, because the government, you know, is basically putting their thumb on the scale everywhere they can. And that's just not the way a good economy is run. But he's right about the problem being inventory, that construction just has not kept up. Biden is right about that. I'm amazed to be saying that. But the problem that Donald Trump is identifying, I think, you know, going into the quote here, I mean, there's a lot more to that quote. But the problem that Trump is rightly identifying, I mean, if you want to listen to Trump on anything, look, you don't have to like the guy. You can disagree with him. You can not like him personally. But he knows real estate. He knows it really well. And so I would listen to him on this, even if he weren't the president. He knows a lot about this subject. He's not the only one, but he does know a lot about it. He's made a fortune in real estate. So he's saying that there are too many regulations on new house building. And it's very true. It's not just federal, though. It's state, it's city, it's across the board. And it's all done in the name of safety. Some reports, and now this is 2019 and before, so I haven't seen reports since then because it's probably astronomically higher. It could be double this. But most reports say pre-2020 that the amount going into just building a new house, not the, including the purchase of the land or anything, just the build itself, is about $80,000 to $90,000 because of regulations. So that's a lot of things. I'm sure it's like supply prices are higher than they used to be too. But because of regulations, and they're really talking about that in these numbers that I've seen, it's not just like, oh, I have to buy a sink and a sink costs more. I have to buy drywall and that costs more. This is, I have to buy things above and beyond what I normally would to the tune of about $80,000 because of regulations. Now, if you start at $80,000 just to pacify code, you're not going to have new cheap houses being built. That's why I look around you. Look anywhere you want. I mean, literally anywhere. The market doesn't matter. Red state, blue state, it doesn't matter. Anywhere a new house is being built, it's not small. Once in a great while, you might find somebody who's doing like one of those little bitty shed houses, like tiny house, but they're novelties. They're not really for people to live their lives in. They're not family homes. They're not single family homes. Single family homes are all, at this point, I would say low end, about $350,000 is a new purchase. And that's a pretty cheap one. That's not even a huge house. Well, it's because of regulations. So if you want to get rid of regulations, you have to convince people that it's in their best interests. The easiest way to do this, the opposite way to do this, the way it's been done, is to convince people that their best interest is to have all these safety regulations. Well, safety regulations are fine, but you have to pay for them. That's the key, isn't it? The thesis of the whole thing, if you want to take away something from this segment, is that when the government gets involved in things, they'll say they're doing it for the right reasons, and sometimes they are. But whatever they do, and this is not just government, but if you add regulations to anything, even if it's self-regulating, you're going to increase the cost of the thing. Now, some of that, there's a balance there. You definitely want to have safety in your medicine, for instance. There's a lot of things there that you go, yeah, but some of those are valuable. Well, that's the balance we have to find. We've swung too far onto the side of safety for all that now we've priced people out of the market to keep them safe. You know what I'm saying? So there's got to be a balance there, and we're too far in one direction. I'm a little long here. We're going to stop. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Wiggins America. Every week, the Mark Cox Morning Show is on from 5 to 9 a.m., and I think that is just a yeoman's effort because that is 4 hours. The Andy Fry Show, Mark Rudin Show do 3 hours. I really don't know how Mark does that. I can barely do 3 hours. I'm only doing two. This is Wiggins America. I do a hit on the Mark Cox Morning Show every week. And this week was a little weird. I had a list that I wanted to bring that involved Donald Trump. Now, I texted Carl, the producer of the show, ahead of time, and I said, look, the name of this list is Things I'm Ashamed Of About the Trump Family. And I waited to see what his reaction would be, because Carl just likes action. He just likes when something's controversial. He really likes that. I'm putting words in all these people's mouths, but I think that that's fair. So I thought Carl will either love this or he would be like, uh-oh, here we go. So I waited to see. Well, Carl responded, this sounds great. So I thought, okay, good. But I did tell him, now if you talk to Mark Cox ahead of time about this, if you decide to tease it, let him know that there may be a little bit of a curveball. It may not be what's exactly on the surface here. Top five things that I'm ashamed of about the Trump family. So I had this list, brought it into the Mark Cox Morning Show, and I really don't think they did tease it ahead of time much, because they didn't really know. Mark didn't know what I was doing. And I love doing that. You know, if you tell somebody everything ahead of time, here in radio, we have a phrase. It's called save it for air. A lot of conversations that we have, we literally are having them for the first time on the air so that it's fresh. We do that because it's harder to fake a reaction if you have something to share. So with that in mind, here is the way that conversation went.
Wiggins! Oh! Wiggins!
So Donald Trump doesn't want to think about it, Ryan, and here you've come armed with a list of things he probably doesn't want to think about.
Sorry, Mr. President. I have things here that I think that your family should really have to answer for, and I don't know why the mainstream media hasn't been interested in this stuff.
They have dropped the ball. There's no doubt about it. But not Ryan Wiggins. Don't you worry.
No. See, I've got a list here of five things that I am ashamed of about the Trump family.
Wow. Okay, let's hear it.
And keep in mind, I am a Donald Trump supporter.
Yes.
You know, I'm going to vote for the guy.
Okay.
Number one, and you can tell me whether you think these things are underreported or whether, you know, America kind of knows about that. Number one, Ivanka left a diary at her beach house that said her dad showered with her as a teenager.
That's really disappointing, but I'm not sure that's factually correct.
Oh.
Fake news. Is this real or fake? Do I get a point?
Well, I did a little research, but not like a ton of research on this.
I think you've mistaken the word Ivanka for Ashley.
Okay, so wrong president.
It is the wrong president.
Okay, my apologies.
That was Ashley Biden who left a diary at the beach house.
That's now been confirmed. It was her diary.
But again, like, my overall point is that it doesn't seem like that's like mainstream news.
It's not been reported by the mainstream media. In fact, it's been denied at every step.
So you're saying it's not normal as an older child to shower with your dad? You mean that's completely
not
creepy?
So. I don't think so. Hmm. And again, I think the reason that I got some of this research wrong is that it's just not reported enough.
Yeah.
Well, that
so
could be.
Which is shocking that the mainstream media is not picking it up.
I agree. So at least we agree on that. Number two, though, back to Donald Trump. There are thousands of naked pictures of Don Jr. online.
Shocking. But when did they come from a laptop that was dropped off at a repair shop?
As I understand it, yes.
Hmm. Wasn't that Hunter?
Oh, shoot.
No, Hunter's done nothing wrong. He goes and serves the homeless. And
I went to CNN.com
he does missions
and I could
trip,
not find
Mark.
That.
You couldn't find that story on CNN.com?
No.
That's weird.
No.
That's because it deals with Hunter Biden and the thousands of naked videos and pictures of him on his laptop.
Again, my fault.
Okay.
But agreed that it's not being reported enough.
You're just not using the right sources.
And if this were, I mean, flip it just real quick, since I did mess up. If it were Don Jr. or if this were Ivanka, you'd think that like all of America would be told every day that
yes.
happened.
It'd be on billboards. So,
especially if it were Ivanka.
Yeah, no doubt.
Okay, number three. Donald Trump created dozens of shell LLCs to funnel money through that is untraceable.
That's shocking.
Now, I mean,
he is an international businessman.
Yeah.
A very successful international businessman.
That's true. But I believe it was Jim and Hunter who created those, as in the Bidens.
So, okay, that makes more sense to me because I was finding a lot about Trump's business, and I couldn't find this exact thing. So
was that on CNN?
Yeah. It was CNN and MSNBC and yeah. New York Times. I was searching all of like the main media to find these things, and I couldn't find much about them.
Did you find the part where Joe Biden was called and put on speakerphone during these meetings, but it was only to just check on the weather?
No, I couldn't find anything about that.
Weird.
Tell me this one, though. Number 4 of 5. Eric Trump slept with his dad's brother or his dead brother's wife multiple times and did drugs with her.
Now, I didn't know that that Donald Trump had a deceased child. I know Joe Biden does.
Does Joe Biden know that he has a deceased child?
Yeah, he just didn't know when that happened.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, facts aside, you'd think, though, that this would be a pretty big, like, salacious story that America would be like, dang, that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, whether it was a Biden or a Trump. But
regardless.
Yeah. In this case, CNN had nothing on that.
That's just, by the way, that whole situation is so odd to me. It's sad enough that Bo died. Like, that's just really sad.
The
fact that he lost his son is really sad. But the fact that then his brother went and was rendezvousing with his wife.
Left
is
his
like,
wife
oh
to
my gosh.
Have an affair with his sister-in-law.
Yeah.
So we agree that it's a big story.
It is.
But I got the facts a little bit wrong.
just a little bit.
You're really close, Ryan.
Just a skosh.
Yeah, and again, you guys are the main hosts. I'm just a kind of a midday side.
It's like tomato, line. Tomato, you know
yeah.
what I mean?
So I'm doing my best here. Number 5, last one. Donald Trump did business under aliases so he could not be traced as easily.
Doing business as, I don't know.
Yeah, under multiple aliases for many, many years, just so that you couldn't find what he was doing. To me, that's wrong. At least it says that something was wrong.
That is wrong. But again, I think that might have been Mr. Biden.
See, there's
Donald Trump's never hidden from anybody.
He puts his name on everything.
Anything. He signs everything.
Proudly.
There's a pattern here that I've messed up, and I apologize because I pretty much ruined this whole segment.
Well, you know, you're a victim of the mainstream media, Ryan. We have to correct that.
You're a justice impacted individual.
I think you are.
Really?
I think so too, because what I've done is criminal. This is Wiggins America. Can we take a break from our regularly scheduled politics for a minute? I got a social situation that I found myself in, and I got this article, too, that says that a plane passenger, and this is from New York Post, was slammed for refusing to switch seats mid-flight. Is he in the wrong? Now, here's the situation he was in, and I'll give you mine. Plane passenger was called incredibly rude after refusing to move seats for a woman who is desperate to get away from a crying baby. According to viral Reddit thread posts this week, the anonymous 34-year-old man was traveling with his wife, who's 36. Not sure why their ages matter. She's 2 years older than him, just in case you were curious. From Dublin to Washington, D.C., and they were initially assigned a window and a middle seat in economy class, like we all would be. However, when no one showed up to claim the aisle seat in the same row, the man moved over for more space, like we all would. For the first 4.5 hours of the flight, Dublin to Washington, D.C. Yeah, okay, that's a long flight. The man claimed nothing eventful happened. Then a random woman across the aisle approached the couple alongside her friend from the back of the plane. According to the disgruntled Redditor, the woman announces that her friend would now be taking the middle seat in between the couple to get away from a crying baby. She did not ask. She just told us this was happening. Now, they're getting on the guy because this woman wanted to get away from the crying baby, and he wouldn't move over. He was like, no, I'm staying in the aisle seat, and we've already been this way for 4.5 hours. You wanting to move does not change my situation. What do you think? Should he have moved to the middle seat to be next to his wife and allowed this person to have the aisle seat to get away from the crying baby? Or is he under absolutely no obligation? I don't really know what I think about this situation. I can tell you that if I were the guy, I would move over because I would, you know, yes, the space is nice and you're on a long flight. So it's not just like a hop to Chicago or something. If you're on that long of a flight, I can get why you're protective of your space. However, if somebody sat between me and my wife, I think I would just naturally move back to this middle seat just out of convenience and awkwardness. So I guess that's where I land on it, that if I were in his shoes, I would do that. But I don't know that I really condemn him for not doing that. I wouldn't be mad at him like Reddit is. Reddit is the great divider of people, though. And so I want to know what you think about this. Now, the reason I bring that up, though, is because I found myself in a similar situation, and I want to present it to you because this is one that I literally did have to respond to. And you can tell me whether I did what was right, or at least what was going on in my head, because I was doing one thing and thinking another. So this is a flight that my wife and I were on, and we were coming back. I think this was just in January. We did a quick weekend down to Orlando, and I am a huge theme park person. I just love them. I just went to Dollywood 2 weeks ago, first time I ever been to Dollywood. Liked it. It was definitely Silver Dollar City-esque. And that's a nice park. I really like Silver Dollar City. Dollywood's like it. But Disney is another echelon. I mean, it's just Disney and I would say even Universal Studios are in kind of a different category, as much as I like Dollywood and Silver Dollar City. And so my wife is not, okay? So she doesn't like parks at all. And I get it. Like, if you're not a park person, you think park people are super lame. And you're right. We are. But I still love them. And I just love rides. Like, I'm 42 years old, and I just am like, yay, a roller coaster. How neat. Ooh, a big drop. So she loves Harry Potter, though. And I knew that she really wanted to go to the Harry Potter world in Orlando at Universal, but she would never do it because she's not a park person. So I kind of surprised her with a weekend vacation with another couple. And we went down, and we did Harry Potter world, and we did a couple other things while we were down there. And it was all fun. It was a surprise. She loved it. Well, on the way home, it was a really quick weekend because I had to get back here to do a show the next day, probably early. And we were coming home kind of late, I think, on that flight. Well, on Southwest, which we were flying, which was cheap, we were sitting next to each other. But I don't know what it was. Like, we got a really late boarding, like in C group. So we were sitting kind of near the back of the plane, but we were next to each other. And there was a mom that gets on the plane, and she has a kid that clearly they can't be separated. Well, if you know anything about Southwest, and this is the situation I was in, if you know anything about Southwest, you know that it's sort of general boarding. You don't have assigned seats. And she got on very late with her kid. Now, they have family boarding. After they call A group, they do a special session there where they call anybody with kids up so that they don't have to separate families and they don't have to go through this long process at the end of trying to move people around so that families, you know, moms and kids and dads don't have to be separated from each other, which I completely understand. But she missed that part, or she just didn't show up for it. I don't know if she was late boarding or what, but there was a lot of things that she did to get there at the time she did, that she missed all of the checks and balances that would cause you to not be in this situation. But the guy next to me was like murmuring under his breath, and he was like, he looked like a punk, not like a 70s punk, but a modern day punk. He had like the big earlobe earrings and a lot of tattoos. And he just looked like he was like a bleeding heart in the best way possible. But he was kind of murmuring to himself, like, I'll move, but it's going to take somebody else to move too. I can't just be the only one who's like doing good, you know, like he was a social justice warrior. And he got to me, he guilted me, because anybody around him could have also moved, but I was sitting close enough to him that I was like, look, if he moves and I move, then this mom can sit with her kid, and then my wife would have to sit there alone next to a kid. And I would have to move, which I didn't want to do. But he guilted me into feeling like I should. And it was a nice thing to do. I'm not saying it wasn't. But the whole time I'm doing it, I'm thinking, listen, this lady, somebody was going to have to do it because nobody's going to make this lady and her like 6-year-old sit apart. But this lady had put herself in a bad situation. It's the old phrase, like, failure to plan on your part does not constitute an emergency on my part. That's really heartless, and that's why I'm presenting it to you, is to say, is this wrong? Hey, I did the right thing, if you want to call that the right thing. I did it. I did the action. But was my heart in the wrong place for kind of being like, come on, this lady should have done. She should have planned a little bit better, you know. That's my situation. I'm presenting it to you because I legitimately do not know what you'll say. So let me know at Radio Wiggins on Twitter. This is Wiggins America. You can. This is not the end of the show yet, but I'm going to tell you. You can type in Wiggins America anyway and get the anywhere and get the podcast, and you can hear the whole show anytime. Thanks for joining us. No matter what you're doing this weekend. We will be right back with one more segment before we close out the show. There's an interesting thing that I've been looking forward to ending this show with this week. Will Scharf is, of course, President Trump's attorney. If you've listened to this station for any time or watched the news for any amount of time, you've probably seen the name Will Scharf. He is also running for Missouri's attorney general. So this is a guy who is from right here. He might be listening right now, and we could invite him on at any point. So I feel a little weird that I'm going to play a national news clip and then not invite him in because, you know, we can. I would invite George Stephanopoulos just the same. But George Stephanopoulos, of course, would not come, whereas Will Scharf would come if we gave him a call and he was in town. Of course, he's traveling a lot right now, being Trump's attorney. But he also is here in St. Louis as much as he possibly can. In fact, this interview, I can't quite tell because he's in a studio separate from George Stephanopoulos. This is from Sunday's, you know, one of those morning talk shows. I don't know the names of all of them. Probably ABC's version of Meet the Press with George Stephanopoulos, whatever that show is called. Well, Will Scharf was on that show this weekend, and you know, stepping into Fox News is one thing. Stepping into the mainstream news is another. I will admit that when I have the microphone as the host of this show, if I have a guest that I disagree with, which doesn't happen a lot, but it does happen, I have the power to push back on a guest more than the guest has the power to push back on me. That's just the nature of being the host. But it also gives the host a tremendous advantage. Such is the case with the mainstream media. That's why having those levers of power is so important that the mainstream... This is Wiggins America. Can we take a break from our regularly scheduled politics for a minute? I got a social situation that I found myself in, and I got this article, too, that says that a plane passenger, and this is from New York Post, was slammed for refusing to switch seats mid-flight. Is he in the wrong? Now, here's the situation he was in, and I'll give you mine. Plane passenger was called incredibly rude after refusing to move seats for a woman who is desperate to get away from a crying baby. According to viral Reddit thread posts this week, the anonymous 34-year-old man was traveling with his wife, who is 36. Not sure why their ages matter. She's 2 years older than him, just in case you were curious. From Dublin to Washington, D.C., and they were initially assigned a window and a middle seat in economy class, like we all would be. However, when no one showed up to claim the aisle seat in the same row, the man moved over for more space, like we all would. For the first 4.5 hours of the flight, Dublin to Washington, D.C. Yeah, okay, that's a long flight. The man claimed nothing eventful happened. Then a random woman across the aisle approached the couple alongside her friend from the back of the plane. According to the disgruntled Redditor, the woman announces that her friend would now be taking the middle seat in between the couple to get away from a crying baby. She did not ask. She just told us this was happening. Now, they're getting on the guy because this woman wanted to get away from the crying baby, and he wouldn't move over. He was like, no, I'm staying in the aisle seat, and we've already been this way for 4.5 hours. You wanting to move does not change my situation. What do you think? Should he have moved to the middle seat to be next to his wife and allowed this person to have the aisle seat to get away from the crying baby? Or is he under absolutely no obligation? I don't really know what I think about this situation. I can tell you that if I were the guy, I would move over because I would, you know, yes, the space is nice and you're on a long flight. So it's not just like a hop to Chicago or something. If you're on that long of a flight, I can get why you're protective of your space. However, if somebody sat between me and my wife, I think I would just naturally move back to this middle seat just out of convenience and awkwardness. So I guess that's where I land on it, that if I were in his shoes, I would do that. But I don't know that I really condemn him for not doing that. I wouldn't be mad at him like Reddit is. Reddit is the great divider of people, though. And so I want to know what you think about this. Now, the reason I bring that up, though, is because I found myself in a similar situation, and I want to present it to you because this is one that I literally did have to respond to, and you can tell me whether I did what was right or at least what was going on in my head, because I was doing one thing and thinking another. So this is a flight that my wife and I were on, and we were coming back. I think this was just in January. We did a quick weekend down to Orlando, and I am a huge theme park person. I just love them. I just went to Dollywood 2 weeks ago, first time I ever been to Dollywood. Liked it. It was definitely Silver Dollar City-esque, and that's a nice park. I really like Silver Dollar City. Dollywood's like it. But Disney is another echelon. I mean, it's just Disney, and I would say even Universal Studios are in kind of a different category, as much as I like Dollywood and Silver Dollar City. And so my wife is not, okay? So she doesn't like parks at all. And I get it. Like, if you're not a park person, you think park people are super lame. And you're right. We are. But I still love them. And I just love rides. Like, I'm 42 years old, and I just am like, yay, a roller coaster. How neat. Ooh, a big drop. So she loves Harry Potter, though. And I knew that she really wanted to go to the Harry Potter world in Orlando at Universal, but she would never do it because she's not a park person. So I kind of surprised her with a weekend vacation with another couple. And we went down, and we did Harry Potter world, and we did a couple other things while we were down there. And it was all fun. It was a surprise. She loved it. Well, on the way home, it was a really quick weekend because I had to get back here to do a show the next day, probably early. And we were coming home kind of late, I think, on that flight. Well, on Southwest, which we were flying, which was cheap, we were sitting next to each other. But I don't know what it was. Like, we got really late boarding, like in C group. So we were sitting kind of near the back of the plane, but we were next to each other. And there was a mom that gets on the plane, and she has a kid that clearly they can't be separated. Well, if you know anything about Southwest, and this is the situation I was in, if you know anything about Southwest, you know that it's sort of general boarding. You don't have assigned seats. And she got on very late with her kid. Now, they have family boarding. After they call A group, they do a special session there where they call anybody with kids up so that they don't have to separate families and they don't have to go through this long process at the end of trying to move people around so that families, you know, moms and kids and dads don't have to be separated from each other, which I completely understand. But she missed that part, or she just didn't show up for it. I don't know if she was late boarding or what, but there was a lot of things that she did to get there at the time she did, that she missed all of the checks and balances that would cause you to not be in this situation. But the guy next to me was like murmuring under his breath, and he was like, he looked like a punk, not like a 70s punk, but a modern day punk. He had like the big earlobe earrings and a lot of tattoos. And he just looked like he was like a bleeding heart in the best way possible. But he was kind of murmuring to himself, like, I'll move, but it's going to take somebody else to move, too. I can't just be the only one who's, like, doing good, you know? Like, he was a social justice warrior. And he got to me. He guilted me because anybody around him could have also moved, but I was sitting close enough to him that I was like, look, if he moves and I move, then this mom can sit with her kid, and then my wife would have to sit there alone next to a kid, and I would have to move, which I didn't want to do. But he guilted me into feeling like I should, and it was a nice thing to do. I'm not saying it wasn't. But the whole time I'm doing it, I'm thinking, listen, this lady, somebody was going to have to do it because nobody's going to make this lady and her like 6-year-old sit apart. But this lady had put herself in a bad situation. It's the old phrase, like, failure to plan on your part does not constitute an emergency on my part. That's really heartless, and that's why I'm presenting it to you, is to say, is this wrong? Hey, I did the right thing, if you want to call that the right thing. I did it. I did the action. But was my heart in the wrong place for kind of being like, come on, this lady should have planned a little bit better, you know? That's my situation. I'm presenting it to you because I legitimately do not know what you'll say. So let me know at Radio Wiggins on Twitter. This is Wiggins America. You can, and it's not the end of the show yet, but I'm going to tell you, you can type in Wiggins America anyway and get the, anywhere and get the podcast, and you can hear the whole show anytime. Thanks for joining us, no matter what you're doing this weekend. We will be right back with one more segment before we close out the show. There's an interesting thing that I've been looking forward to ending this show with this week. Will Scharf is, of course, President Trump's attorney. If you've listened to this station for any time or watched the news for any amount of time, you've probably seen the name Will Scharf. He is also running for Missouri's attorney general. So this is a guy who is from right here. He might be listening right now, and we could invite him on at any point. So I feel a little weird that I'm going to play a national news clip and then not invite him in because, you know, we can. I would invite George Stephanopoulos just the same. But George Stephanopoulos, of course, would not come, whereas Will Scharf would come if we gave him a call and he was in town. Of course, he's traveling a lot right now, being Trump's attorney. But he also is here in St. Louis as much as he possibly can. In fact, this interview, I can't quite tell because he's in a studio separate from George Stephanopoulos. This is from Sunday's, you know, one of those morning talk shows. I don't know the names of all of them, probably ABC's version of Meet the Press with George Stephanopoulos, whatever that show's called. Well, Will Scharf was on that show this weekend, and, you know, stepping into Fox News is one thing. Stepping into the mainstream news is another. I will admit that when I have the microphone as the host of this show, if I have a guest that I disagree with, which doesn't happen a lot, but it does happen, I have the power to push back on a guest more than the guest has the power to push back on me. That's just the nature of being the host, but it also gives the host a tremendous advantage. Such is the case with the mainstream media. That's why having those levers of power is so important, that the mainstream host can make the guest look stupid if they want to. So stepping into those environments is really tough. Fully admit that on both sides of the aisle. I think everybody understands how that goes. Will Scharf then stepping into these scenarios is an exercise in in amazement on my part. I don't know. That was a stupid phrase. This is a masterclass. I'll say that. Because I watched this interview that he did, Will Scharf did, with George Stephanopoulos, and was surprised at how well he did, because George is good at this. He's using all of the the tricks of the trade to make his points and then turn it onto the guest, who he clearly has animosity towards. But I'll start with, and there's a lot more to this interview, but I'm starting toward the end because that's when, to me, the fireworks really start with them battling. And Will does a great job. I mean, really, really. I was like, wow, dude. Here is Will and George, clip number one, when George Stephanopoulos asks Will Scharf about the weaponization of the courts.
He talked about the weaponization of the legal system. Of course, it was former President Trump who threw out the 2016 campaign led chants of lock her up about Hillary Clinton. But what do you expect from the sentencing process?
Well, but hold on a second, George. President Trump may have said that, but after he entered office, he certainly didn't weaponize the Department of Justice to pursue his political opponents the way that we've seen President Trump and his political allies act in the last couple years. Remember, this case in New York, it was called the zombie case. It sat and sat and sat. It could have been brought at any point after 2020. And then suddenly, when President Trump announced his campaign for president, was dusted off, rushed in front of a grand jury, and then rushed into court. You want to talk about the politicization of the legal system? I mean, this is Exhibit A. It's absolutely unprecedented in American history. It's not the way that our campaigns are supposed to be run. We contest elections at the ballot box, not in the courts in this country.
So did you hear how George Stephanopoulos asks a question, but kind of couches that question with, but here are the real facts. How do you respond? And Will knocks it down. I mean, he knocks it out of the park, I should say, because the whole lock her up thing is true. I don't remember Trump actually saying lock her up, but definitely people were chanting that at his rallies, and he was all about it. But then he became president, and you know what he didn't do? Lock up his political opponents. The minute he announces he's running for office, Will calls this a zombie case because it was. It was a federal case that even the federal government for a long time had sat on and not pursued. And it's also a really, really weak case. Anybody who's unbiased would say that, that this is kind of stuff that happens all the time, and it's usually a misdemeanor if they pursue it at all. The federal government decided not to because they knew, well, this would be a misdemeanor. And then he started running for office. Then Trump announced, and then all of a sudden people said, let's dust that off. Let's get that again. George Stephanopoulos tries to use the tricks of the trade in this question. Listen here.
That is true, but of course we've never had had a former president or a presidential candidate facing the kind of charges that the president faced because of his own activities. And of course the attorney general in Manhattan has nothing to do with the Department of Justice. Finally, what do you expect from the sentencing process?
Yeah, finally, let me ask you a question after I make a bunch of points that I'm not going to let you respond to. Will Scharf does not take the bait.
I vehemently disagree that the district attorney in New York was not politically motivated here, and I vehemently disagree that President Biden and his political allies aren't up to their necks in this prosecution. I think the fact
there's no evidence of that, sir. I'm not going to let you continue to say that. There's just zero evidence of that.
I won't let you talk because you're saying false things that I am saying are false. But if George were to hear proof, he would certainly change his mind, right? I mean, he's not just saying talking points from the White House. He's not just carrying water for the Biden administration, right? He's just there for the facts. Oh, Will's got the facts.
Well, how about the fact that Matthew Colangelo was standing over Alvin Bragg's shoulder when he announced this verdict? I mean, Colangelo was the number three official in the Biden Department of Justice who suddenly disappears and shows up as an assistant district attorney right as Trump's case in New York starts to proceed.
After
you want to talk about political You want to talk about political coordination?
This has nothing to do. No, it's not. This has nothing to do with President Biden. Do you want to answer the question about the sentencing process or not?
I completely disagree that this has nothing to do with President Biden. With respect to sentencing, as I said before, we're going to vigorously challenge this case on appeal. I don't think President Trump is going to end up being subject to any sentence whatsoever. And we look forward to getting this case into the next court and taking this again all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, if necessary, to vindicate President Trump's rights.
It's just amazing to hear the president's attorney. Trump's attorney, Will Scharf, there, also running for Missouri Attorney General, of course, just take on that question with facts. This is what it sounds like when the facts are on your side. When you're in an interview like this, it is tough. It is tough to battle the host because as a host, you have the relationship with the audience. The guest doesn't so much. So the host is inviting you into his space. And so the viewer, typically, if you've tuned into ABC and you watch George Stephanopoulos on a regular basis, you probably like him. I don't know that you're watching him to do Oppo research. Maybe if you're in our industry, you are. But most people are not. They're watching him because they have a relationship with the Today Show and the anchors and George Stephanopoulos and whatever. So when you walk into that environment, the host naturally has an advantage. But that's what it looks like when the facts are on your side, because in this case, the facts prove that this is unprecedented. Not just that they're prosecuting a president, but the way they're doing it and the case itself is just super weak. Legal analysts from across the aisle are saying this stuff. You don't have to look very far to find. You don't have to look just to Fox News. I mean, you could actually tune in to CNN. I don't know about MSNBC, but there are people on both sides of the aisle saying, yeah, this is a case that is usually not tried. And people understand that. I think that that's why there's a sympathy for Trump. And I've said this before, and I'll end the show saying it again. It is amazing that the left has gone so far, and I would argue overplayed their hand here, although I don't like it. I think we did a poll on the Annie Frye Show once that said, even if this does help President Trump's poll numbers, is it good? You know, is this good that we've gone through this? And I think the overwhelming answer was no. It certainly was my answer, that even if it does help him win the presidency, it's still not good that it's happened. It would be good if he won, because obviously 4 more years of what we're experiencing now. I mean, imagine what 4 more years looks like of this economy, of the border, of crime, of foreign policy. But the left has overplayed their hand here, and America is waking up to that fact. And it has made President Trump, again, like I've said before, a billionaire, I think, at least multimillionaire. Oh, no, he is a billionaire now because of Truth Social. a television star, a celebrity, a former president into a victim. It has made him the victim. And so there's sympathy for this guy who, by all measures, he's not a sympathetic guy. President Trump is not somebody that you look at and you feel sorry for, but they've overplayed their hand so much that he actually has become that. It is incredible, and it might be one of the biggest political miscalculations in at least modern history because of what it could cause, which is a second Trump term. We'll stop there. This is Wiggins America. Get the podcast anywhere you want. You type in Wiggins America, and it will come up in multiple locations. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next week.
Get more at 971talk.com.
There's an interesting thing that I've been looking forward to ending this show with this week. Will Scharf is, of course, President Trump's attorney. If you've listened to this station for any time or watched the news for any amount of time, you've probably seen the name Will Scharf. He is also running for Missouri's attorney general. So this is a guy who is from right here. He might be listening right now, and we could invite him on at any point. So I feel a little weird that I'm going to play a national news clip and then not invite him in because, you know, we can. I would invite George Stephanopoulos just the same. But George Stephanopoulos, of course, would not come, whereas Will Scharf would come if we gave him a call and he was in town. Of course, he's traveling a lot right now, being Trump's attorney. But he also is here in St. Louis as much as he possibly can. In fact, this interview, I can't quite tell because he's in a studio separate from George Stephanopoulos. This is from Sunday's, you know, one of those morning talk shows. I don't know the names of all of them, probably ABC's version of Meet the Press with George Stephanopoulos, whatever that show is called. Well, Will Scharf was on that show this weekend, and, you know, stepping into Fox News is one thing. Stepping into the mainstream news is another. I will admit that when I have the microphone as the host of this show, if I have a guest that I disagree with, which doesn't happen a lot, but it does happen, I have the power to push back on a guest more than the guest has the power to push back on me. That's just the nature of being the host. But it also gives the host a tremendous advantage. Such is the case with the mainstream media. That's why having those levers of power is so important, that the mainstream host can make the guest look stupid if they want to. So stepping into those environments is really tough. Fully admit that on both sides of the aisle. I think everybody understands how that goes. Will Scharf then stepping into these scenarios is an exercise in in amazement on my part. I don't know. That was a stupid phrase. This is a masterclass. I'll say that. Because I watched this interview that he did, Will Scharf did, with George Stephanopoulos, and was surprised at how well he did, because George is good at this. He's using all of the the tricks of the trade to make his points and then turn it onto the guest, who he clearly has animosity towards. But I'll start with, and there's a lot more to this interview, but I'm starting toward the end because that's when, to me, the fireworks really start with them battling. And Will does a great job. I mean, really, really. I was like, wow, dude. Here is Will and George, clip number one, when George Stephanopoulos asks Will Scharf about the weaponization of the courts.
You talked about the weaponization of the legal system. Of course, it was former President Trump who, throughout the 2016 campaign, led chants of lock her up about Hillary Clinton. But what do you expect from the sentencing process?
Well, but hold on a second, George. President Trump may have said that, but after he entered office, he certainly didn't weaponize the Department of Justice to pursue his political opponents the way that we've seen President Trump and his political allies act in the last couple of years. Remember, this case in New York, it was called the zombie case. It sat and sat and sat. It could have been brought at any point after 2020. And then suddenly, when President Trump announced his campaign for president, was dusted off, rushed in front of a grand jury, and then rushed into court. You want to talk about the politicization of the legal system? I mean, this is Exhibit A. It's absolutely unprecedented in American history. It's not the way that our campaigns are supposed to be run. We contest elections at the ballot box, not in the courts in this country.
So did you hear how George Stephanopoulos asks a question, but kind of couches that question with, but here are the real facts. How do you respond? And Will knocks it down. I mean, he knocks it out of the park, I should say, because the whole lock her up thing is true. I don't remember Trump actually saying lock her up, but definitely people were chanting that at his rallies, and he was all about it. But then he became president, and you know what he didn't do? Lock up his political opponents. The minute he announces he's running for office, Will calls this a zombie case because it was. It was a federal case that even the federal government for a long time had sat on and not pursued. And it's also a really, really weak case. Anybody who's unbiased would say that, that this is kind of stuff that happens all the time, and it's usually a misdemeanor if they pursue it at all. The federal government decided not to because they knew, well, this would be a misdemeanor. And then he started running for office. Then Trump announced. And then all of a sudden, people said, let's dust that off. Let's get that again. George Stephanopoulos tries to use the tricks of the trade in this question. Listen here.
That is true. But of course, we've never had a former president or a presidential candidate facing the kind of charges that the president faced because of his own activities. And of course, the attorney general in Manhattan has nothing to do with the Department of Justice. Finally, what do you expect from the sentencing process?
Yeah, finally, let me ask you a question after I make a bunch of points that I'm not going to let you respond to. Will Scharf does not take the bait.
I vehemently disagree that the district attorney in New York was not politically motivated here. And I vehemently disagree that President Biden and his political allies aren't up to their necks in this prosecution. I think the fact
there's no evidence of that, sir. There's no. I'm not going to let you continue to say that. There's just zero evidence of that.
I won't let you talk because you're saying false things that I am saying are false. But if George were to hear proof, he would certainly change his mind, right? I mean, he's not just saying talking points from the White House. He's not just carrying water for the Biden administration, right? He's just there for the facts. Oh, Will's got the facts.
Well, how about the fact that Matthew Colangelo was standing over Alvin Bragg's shoulder when he announced this verdict? I mean, Colangelo was the number three official in the Biden Department of Justice who suddenly disappears and shows up as an assistant district attorney right as Trump's case in New York starts to proceed.
After
you want to talk about political you want to talk about political coordination?
This has nothing
George,
to do.
Right
this has nothing to do. No, it's not. This has nothing to do with President Biden. Do you want to answer the question about the sentencing process or not?
I completely disagree that this has nothing to do with President Biden. With respect to sentencing, as I said before, we're going to vigorously challenge this case on appeal. I don't think President Trump is going to end up being subject to any sentence whatsoever. And we look forward to getting this case into the next court and taking this again all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, if necessary, to vindicate President Trump's rights.
It's just amazing to hear the president's attorney. Trump's attorney, Will Scharf, there, also running for Missouri Attorney General, of course, just take on that question with facts. This is what it sounds like when the facts are on your side. When you're in an interview like this, it is tough. It is tough to battle the host because as a host, you have the relationship with the audience. The guest doesn't so much. So the host is inviting you into his space. And so he, you know, the viewer typically, if you've tuned into ABC and you watch George Stephanopoulos on a regular basis, you probably like him. I don't know that you're watching him to do Oppo research. Maybe if you're in our industry, you are, but most people are not. They're watching him because they have a relationship with the Today Show and the anchors and George Stephanopoulos and whatever. So when you walk into that environment, the host naturally has an advantage. But that's what it looks like when the facts are on your side, because in this case, the facts prove that this is unprecedented. Not just that they're prosecuting a president, but the way they're doing it and the case itself is just super weak. Legal analysts from across the aisle are saying this stuff. You don't have to look very far to find. You don't have to look just to Fox News. I mean, you could actually tune in to CNN. I don't know about MSNBC, but there are people on both sides of the aisle saying, yeah, this is a case that is usually not tried. And people understand that. I think that that's why there's a sympathy for Trump. And I've said this before, and I'll end the show saying it again. It is amazing that the left has gone so far, and I would argue overplayed their hand here, although I don't like it. I think we did a poll on the Annie Fry Show once that said, even if this does help President Trump's poll numbers, is it good? You know, is this good that we've gone through this? And I think the overwhelming answer was no. It certainly was my answer. that even if it does help him win the presidency, it's still not good that it's happened. It would be good if he won, because obviously 4 more years of what we're experiencing now, I mean, imagine what 4 more years looks like of this economy, of the border, of crime, of foreign policy. But the left has overplayed their hand here, and America is waking up to that fact, and it has made President Trump, again, like I've said before, a billionaire, I think, at least multimillionaire. Oh, no, he is a billionaire now because of Truth Social. A television star, a celebrity, a former president, into a victim. It has made him the victim. And so there's sympathy for this guy who, by all measures, he's not a sympathetic guy. President Trump is not somebody that you look at and you feel sorry for, but they've overplayed their hand so much that he actually has become that. It is incredible, and it might be one of the biggest political miscalculations in at least modern history because of what it could cause, which is a second Trump term. We'll stop there. This is Wiggins America. Get the podcast anywhere you want. You type in Wiggins America, and it will come up in multiple locations. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next week.
Get more at 971talk.com.